someone who is fascinated by the wider world. I think that the starting point there, which talks about laundry, is also talking about her gaze, which is at the horizon and is wondering what's beyond there. And she knows a bit about it because she's a reader, and she can borrow books from Mr. Bennett, and she can borrow the books from Elizabeth, and she also gets her hands on the newspaper 3 days after he's finished with it. But she is someone who is hungry for experience and hungry for information about the wider world.
But she has to work bone-grindingly hard. Yeah. Tell us about the working day for a girl like Sarah.
Well, if it's laundry day, you have to get up an hour earlier than you normally would. So you get up at about 4:30. And this might well be after sitting up late waiting for the family to come back the night before. And then, you know, you have to, if it's a laundry day, and the laundry day is exceptional, but it's an extreme example of it, you have to begin by fetching water to do the washing. But that's no good if you haven't already fetched the fuel the night before. So you have to, you know, have organized that the night before in order to heat the water. You had to make the soap, which actually had to be done 6 weeks previously in order that it sort of mature and stop being completely caustic. So it basically takes 6 weeks to get the soap ready. And in order to make the soap, you have to use rendered animal fat. So really, to wash a shirt back in 1811, you have to start by killing a sheep. It's incredibly complicated and sort of formal ways that things must be done. And, you know, you, because there's little in the way of indoor plumbing, you might have a tank that you fill in the scullery. But beyond that, water has to be carried to the bedrooms, fires have to be lit, there's all the meals to be prepared from scratch every day. And it's basically relentless from the time that you get up to the time that you manage to stagger up to bed at night. Over the eastern hills, the sky was fading to a transparent indigo. Sarah, glancing up, hands stuffed into her armpits, her breath clouding the air, dreamed of the wild places beyond the horizon where it was already fully light, and of how, when her day was over, the sun would be shining on other places still, on the Barbados and Antigua and Jamaica, where the dark men worked half naked, and on the Americas, where the Indians wore almost no clothes at all, and there was consequently very little in the way of laundry, and how one day she would go there and never have to wash other people's underthings again.
But Jo, in case this sounds like a straight retelling of Pride and Prejudice,
yeah,
I think it's important to say that it's not, because
no,
your characters have their own lives and dramas, and it's also quite separate from the family of daughters upstairs.
Yeah.
So James comes into the story. Now, what's his job? Yeah. Where does he fit in?
Well, James is the footman. James comes in, he's the footman who's mentioned in Pride and Prejudice. He's this young man who they employ. My book starts a little bit before the events of Pride and Prejudice with his arrival in the household. Yeah, he's a man who's sort of, we know he's been on the tramp, which is a term for being out looking for work for a long time, being on the roads. But that's really all we know about him when he arrives.
So when a character like James comes into your novel, the other things that are going on in Georgian England that are hidden in Jane Austen's novels, they come to the fore much more strongly.
Yes.
And
yes,
there's a war on, and it's a brutal war.
Yes.
And in some ways it touches your characters more directly than it does the Mrs. Bennett.
Yeah, it does. The soldiers that are present in Pride and Prejudice are militia, which means they are a regiment that's been formed to remain in at home in England and keep an eye on, you know, there's an awful lot of social unrest at the time. We're talking about the time of the Luddite riots. So, you know, there were really hard winters, really poor crops. It was a really difficult time for people who were being displaced by increased mechanization, that kind of thing. People were struggling to earn a living and feed their families, and it was a really hard time, and they were getting very political, and that's what the militia are doing in England at the time. The reason that for me, that was really interesting to explore that. It all started really with a line from Lydia. When the girls come back from Netherfield after Jane's been ill, Lydia's catching them up on the gossip, and she says something along the lines of, it's reported, we don't get her speech, but reported speech says something along the lines of, this thing's happened, it's rumoured that Colonel Forster's going to be married, and a private had been flogged. And that's just sort of brushed over, never mentioned again. It's probably considered a bit like not polite conversation by the other girls and the family in general. But for me, it was just like, what? You know, this man's been flogged. You know, I mean, what is that? What's the reality of that like? And so that's what's it, James's arrival and that line, the two things kind of merged together for me. You know, there's little hints that are in Austen of this wider and more violent world. You know, it's a private that's been flogged. It's, you know, it's not an officer. It's someone who belongs to the same rank, if you will, as the servantry. It's their world that belongs to.
Well, here's a slightly cheeky question then about trusting to the imagination.
Yeah.
This novel you've written, it's a love story and a drama. It's a very nicely worked piece of historical fiction. You've got
Thank you.
Wars in France, the pressures of daily life, the drama of loss. What if I say to you that you didn't really need the house at Longbourn or the Bennets to write the novel?
Well, I don't think I would have written the novel if that was the thing that set me off. It was the interest in these little minnow flickers of activity, these characters who didn't have a voice, who didn't have a story. They served the story in Pride and Prejudice, and I wanted to find out what their stories might have been, what they could have been. And so the book just wouldn't have happened. It was an entirely organic thing. It wasn't like I wanted to write about this period. It was that I wanted to find out, what's that footman doing there, and where has he been before, and what's it like for him to have to live like that? And similarly, you know, with the petticoats and the housemaid who, you know, is ordered off to do another thing, how does she feel about that? And for me, the key line that set this book off and running was when it's been raining, the roads are mired, you can't get anywhere without getting soaked and filthy. And it said the very shoe roses for Netherfield had to be got by proxy. And I just, you know, given that my grandma was a servant, I sort of was aware of the fact that proxy is a person too. You know, proxy is a young woman, perhaps a maidservant, who has to go and do what the Bennet girls are not prepared to do, because they pay her to do it. And she's got very little choice in the matter. She has to go out and get soaked. And so for me, that the book comes entirely out of Pride and Prejudice, just because of those key moments that just set it off, really.
So you don't need to be set free from Miss Austen because she's liberated your imagination.
I mean, I think the thing is with this book is it comes from a position of just loving Pride and Prejudice, having read it a thousand times and knowing it really intimately in the way that, like, I knew that Georgian house back in, you know, in the village where I grew up. There's a kind of long-standing and an intimate knowledge of that book. And so it was about reading, you know, having read it so many times, it's almost like reading the stuff that isn't actually in her book as well. It's almost like this book is a reading of Pride and Prejudice in a way, just a very intense and exploratory one that takes you out of the parlours and down the stairs and into the kitchen and across the yard and into the stables.
Isn't that a great idea? It's such a good idea for a book. Jo Baker speaking to Kate Evans about her book, which is called Longbourn, and it's published by Random House. And the novel, the Austen novel, is about to be made into a film. I wonder if the filmmakers will keep the story below stairs with a virtually invisible Mr. Darcy, whose class was such that servants wouldn't look him in the eye, or will they want to keep Jane Austen's characters more in the frame? We'll have to wait and see.